Hey, it's Open Threads. It's my podcast. I'm Brian Castle. Welcome. Today, I'm talking to my buddy, Ian Landsman. Hey, before I roll today's episode, here's my real-time update on what I'm working on. I'm recording this update on March 8th, 2024. Well, if you've been following my story heading into this year, then you know I'm in a transition phase. I'm exploring some new directions to take in my business. And this month, I decided to come back to my roots and focus my energy on what I do best, and that's building new products. So I've launched what I'm calling a product studio, and I'm calling it Instrumental Products. It's where I get to partner with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies on taking new product ideas from concept to launched. And, you know, since I'm a full stack designer and developer, my focus now is on continuously building new software products and continuing to grow that muscle. Sometimes I'm building products with clients, sometimes with partners, and building some new products of my own to grow out my portfolio at Instrumental Products. And as always, I love to build in public on my YouTube channel and on Twitter and, you know, share the process of taking new product ideas to life. So that's what I'm up to, building products in public. And I'm still running my SaaS product, Clarity Flow, which is doing its thing this year. All right, so that's my update. You can follow along with me on Twitter. I'm at CastJam. I'd love to hear from you if you have any feedback for anything I'm working on, especially this show on the podcast. And with that, let's get into today's show. If there's anyone who can help explain what's been happening in the space of Web3, cryptocurrency, NFTs, and everything in between, where it came from, where it's going, how to think about all this, it's Ian. He's deep in it, as you can see from his Twitter feed. So yeah, we had a good chat about all things crypto and all things Web3. Let's get right into it. Ian Landsman, what's up, buddy?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. Yeah, great to connect with you again. And my goal with you anytime we're on a podcast together is to get as close to like a podcast about nothing, where we're just rambling about random shit.
Perfect theme.
Yep. But I've known you for a while now, but you know, one thing that I notice from you on Twitter specifically is how you kind of latch on to some topic, some like subject matter area, and then you just go like deep on, down the rabbit hole for like months on end. And, and for at least the past year, what I've seen a lot of your feed is NFTs and Web3 and crypto. I thought this would be a good opportunity for you to school me a little bit on what's happening in this space. And I know it's actually kind of crazy right now. This episode would, I don't know, it'll probably air about a month from now. So I'm sure most of what we talk about is going to be like completely out of date by then.
In some regards, not others.
Yeah. But anyway, today is May 10th, 2022, for the record.
Everything's crashing today and yesterday. Stocks, yeah. Crypto, whatever. Everything's crashed.
I'm kind of curious, like for you, where did it begin? Where did like the interest in crypto or Web3 or any of that stuff kind of start?
So I never had any interest in crypto. I missed out on everything. People were telling me like buy Bitcoin 10 years ago. I was like, it's stupid. I don't get it. I didn't look into it. Like all that stuff. So totally missed the whole crypto boat. I do think from a positioning aspect, to be businessy on it a little bit, like I didn't get the positioning back then and I still don't really get the positioning on like pure crypto. Like crypto, the people who want to change the current financial system and make everything crypto. Like to me,
a little much.
Yeah. Like whatever. Like, I don't know. Like I'm not that interested in that aspect of it. Maybe that'll become true, but that was what everybody obviously was saying 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really resonate with me that strongly. And right. So I just kind of ignored it.
I think, you know, actually like, cause I feel like I missed the early boat too. Because we're in the tech industry and we did know about Bitcoin earlier than most people knew about it. But right. Like you, I was like, that just sounds stupid. And mostly because of that positioning, I was like, well, I don't know. This is not going to last very long. And then
right.
Yeah, if only I bought like one Bitcoin back in the day.
Right. I know, we've all gone through our accounts, right? Like, did I make that Coinbase account 8 years ago?
Yep.
No, I did. Oh, actually, I did make the account, but I didn't buy anything. Why didn't I buy anything?
Yeah, I didn't really get in until like the first, I would say like mainstream wave, which was what, like 2017, 2018?
Right, yeah,
there was like a
popped up.
Yeah, I put a bunch in and then I kept a bunch in since then. Not too much. But anyway, I want to hear more about how.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, I wasn't even in then. Even then, I was like, like, whatever. Like, it's obviously it's going up and down. I had like a tiny amount, just like literally like $1,000 in a couple things. And like, I'd occasionally watch it go up and down, you know, quadruple and then fall and whatever. And didn't really follow it very closely.
Like just coins, just like hearing about coins and.
Right. Just like those random things. And like literally just a few $100 and stuff like that. Like nothing. Wasn't even thinking about it. And then the first thing that piqued my interest, like, so like. You start hear a little bit about Ethereum and how, and like contracts and basically the ability to do more with it than just be a replacement for the financial system. So that's like kind of back in my head, but I still didn't really do too much with it because Ethereum like has all these expenses and it's slow and all this stuff. So again, like not really interesting to me. It's like, okay, like it can do 10 transactions as, you know, second, fine. Like that to me doesn't feel like it's going to revolutionize anything, which is obviously that's how everything starts. I probably should have looked more into it even then, but like I didn't. And then I found out about Solana, which its main thing was that it's like high throughput, essentially no transaction fees.
Yeah.
So then that like clicked with me. I was like, well, if you could do like 10,000 transactions a second and there's no transaction fees and like it can store this data and it's got this public ledger and like it's not solely about, like they don't position it so much about replacing the financial system, although there is definitely a large part of it that's about that too. So that really piqued my interest. I was like, okay, like this I get.
I'm realizing like early on in this podcast, I should probably do the statement where like, this is not financial advice.
Not financial
advice. We don't know what the hell we're talking about here. Like, no. You know, but yeah, like Solana, for me, Solana was the first one that's like beyond Bitcoin and Ethereum, which were like the two basically mainstream tokens that I guess they still are. But then Solana was the first one where personally I ventured a little bit past those two. And it was like, oh, that actually solves like the problem with Ethereum is like, it's more efficient, right?
Right. Yeah. It's a more like sort of climate wise, it's vastly more efficient. And yeah, speed wise, I mean, like just a reference, I think Visa does something like 30,000 transactions a second and is capable of 50 or 60,000 and like whatever. Obviously, theoretically, Solana can do similar numbers, whether ultimately it does that or not. Right now, it doesn't do that quite yet. And there's other chains now, too, that are usually more modern systems of verification and stuff that allow much higher throughput.
I guess it still comes back to the question of, like, why does any of that even matter?
Right.
What's the whole point of even buying this stuff? To me, I still feel like very much of like a layman, not even all that interested in crypto and Web3, but I do feel like it's important enough for me to try to keep an ear to it a little bit. And put a small percentage of everything that we have into it. And that's what I do.
Right. Just as like a sort of hedge in case it's huge.
Yeah, exactly. Right. In case this is like even before the beginning, at least we were here. You know, I dabble in like hearing about it and tuning into some podcasts and stuff, but I'm not following it every day. Like, when did you start to get like really more into it?
Yeah. So this was like last spring, summer. So I'd still like financially wise missed the like huge move in these things because like Solana was like a dollar before that. And like then it was like probably $20 to $40 in that range when I was first getting interested. So definitely I'm super late to it all. But you know, late relative, obviously, if it becomes a huge thing, it's super early. It becomes nothing, I'm super late. So who knows? But I'm still not really that invested in it financially, like in terms of actual Solana coins or Ethereum coins or any of that, because ultimately kind of in the late summer last year is when NFTs started taking off and more of that aspect of things. And that's the part that actually really drew me in, because that to me is the like, from a technologist perspective, from a software developer perspective, like that is where it connects to our world. And I can see the value in digital ownership and things like that. So that's where it kind of like bridged over to me. And I was like, oh yeah, of course. Like, I totally get this. Like, this is amazing. Like, I love this. So,
this is what I want to get into with you. I'm still learning and I'm still trying to figure out what I think about all that I do think that there seems to be opportunity in what people are calling Web3 and like tokenization. And to me, there are like glimpses of potential possibilities of what this stuff can mean, like in terms of like smart contracts and how something can like grow in value. Like I like to think back to like an artist, especially like a musician, but I guess this can go for any kind of art, where the original creator can be paid as their art continues to be bought and sold over time, which is like fundamentally not possible with like physical paintings, right?
Right.
That seems interesting. And then I wonder how that can like adapt into other use cases.
Yeah, well, I sort of see it. I mean, the three main areas I'm interested in, and there's lots of other edge cases and people have all kinds of things they're attempting to do, right? But the three main ones are, like, yes, you have like, what is the most visible aspect is like the art, right? And you have the one side that loves it. You have others, many people who make fun of it, right? You have monkeys and dragons and whatever, right? Like digital art. And you have Beeple, who's like the very mainstream, but he's making still pretty weird art, Elon Musk naked and whatever, all kinds of stuff that he does.
So I don't even know about this.
Oh, Beeple's like probably the most famous.
No, I know Beeple. Like, yeah, I didn't
know. Right. Yeah, he's done it. He does one every day.
Okay.
Anyway, so there's a pure art aspect of like artists doing one-off art. There's artists doing these collections like Bored Apes and things like that people have probably heard of. So what you're referencing there is that when you resell this art, the royalty, a percentage of the sale goes just automatically to, and there's some details around that, whatever. But ultimately, a percentage of that goes to the artist. So that it's not just like when the artist is dead, maybe it becomes worth something or like whatever, or they're forced to keep creating stuff because that's the only way to live. Like you could create a couple things that are huge hits and make a lot of money, you know, ongoing because people are reselling it and things like that. So that's just interesting in the art perspective. I think it's interesting in the like art, like with, I mean, just look around, like everybody's face is in their phone all the time. So like, or they're on the computer screen or whatever. So this is where humans experience art, right? Like they're not experiencing it in the physical world as much. They're experiencing it in the digital world. And so it makes sense to me that there's this concept of ownership
in the
digital world.
It still seems like a little bit too abstract to me. The thing where I feel like a disconnect with the artwork and like NFT and like the stuff that we're seeing all over Twitter, I guess I sort of understand like the idea of like with like Bored Apes and what was the other early one?
CryptoPunks.
Yeah, CryptoPunks. Like the whole value that people are buying into is like, oh, it's the first of these and this is going to be bigger later. But the reason why this is high value is because it's one of the first ever, right? Like whatever, like a Babe Ruth rookie card, or like you're getting in super early. Then it sort of like kept going and you still see new projects and some of them are like creative and funny and innovative and weird. But I hear a lot of people, maybe you're going to disagree with me on, there's a lot of folks who just have money to throw around and they're investing in stuff like NFTs. And they talk about it like they're super into the artwork. And to me, it's like, come on, dude, you're not into the artwork. This is
Yeah.
I mean, if they were, like, they would be investing in real art too. Like, that's the parallel that you can, yes, people store wealth in like physical paintings and, right, like, that's the part of it that seems like a little bit like this feels like a bubble and a trend that's going to fade away at some point.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely 100% could for sure. I think to me, the aspect is, are they into the art? There's the whole range of people who I think are absolutely super into the art to people who are just completely lying every time they say anything and are just trying to like pump their bags, which would be the phrase you would use in these scenarios. But there's, you know, there's NFTs that look exactly like a painted work of art. Like if I printed it out and brought it into you on a canvas, you'd say, oh, like you painted that. And there's obviously monkeys and there's whatever. Like there's a whole gamut, right? So I don't know though that those same people would buy physical art. Like to me, it's, again, like I feel like this is where our experience is and people are excited by the idea of their art being where they live their life and that they don't actually live their life in, you know, a lot of these people are younger too, right? So like, if you're 25, like you don't have a McMansion in the suburbs where you have your art collection. And if you're in some little apartment and this is your world, then this is where you want to experience these things. And so.
And I guess like the parallel of like hanging a painting on your wall is sort of like making an NFT your Twitter avatar. That's where you can show it, right?
Yeah.
Right. And it's even more so, right? Because like, how many people are ever going to see this piece of art on my wall? Like, very few. Like, versus how many people are going to see my Twitter avatar? Or even with physical art, like people who go out and buy physical art and then they give it to a museum, like expensive, famous physical art, right? Like, because nobody's going to see it in their house. Like, so that goes to the museum so people can experience it and all those things. So you don't have to have that here because I can share it with you. I'm not even in control of who it's shared with, which is, I think, a whole interesting aspect, which is where, like, anybody can take something I own and share it. And actually, that is encouraged because that actually builds awareness of it. And so that's a very different sort of thing to think about when the whole world has been built so long on, like, how do we restrict you? No, you can't share a picture of this Van Gogh right here because, like, somebody owns the rights to whatever and, like, blah, blah, blah. And we're going to have lawyers sue you and stop you. And having a little bit different mindset about that of, like, yes, it's, I can own something, but it can also be available to others to experience. Yeah.
Like, in a minute, I want to get into how we get into, like, our world of, like, software development and changing up business models with Web3 and things like that.
Right. Those are some of the other things, yeah.
But before we get there, I'm just kind of curious about, like, your, because, again, like, you're tweeting about this stuff. You seem to be much more in it than I am. I feel like completely, like, all the FOMO, like, completely left out. Like, right. I'm missing whatever's happening over there. I don't know if right. that's a good or bad thing. What does it look like for you, like, day to day in terms of, like, what are you following? Who are you following for information? What kinds of things are you buying or selling? Like, where's your activity going?
So, I mean, I've been all over with it. Just early days, like, in the popular projects, like, had a Mutant Ape, which is the Bored Ape alternative, and, like, the Solana sort of equivalents of the popular collections and things. And some of them I have ones I'm holding on to, just, like, filed away. And maybe they're going to go to zero, and maybe they're going to be worth a lot of money. Who knows? But I am getting more interested in the, like, next phase of it. So, like, one of the things, probably the collection or project I'm most involved in is this one where it's an NFT-based horse racing game. And so, like, this is sort of getting, it's like the interesting things you can do.
Oh, and like gaming is another interesting element.
Yeah, it's gaming and it's like, but it's a whole economy. So it's like, you can own a track, you can own a horse, you can breed the horse, which all sounds crazy. I totally agree. But it's no different than, like, I play PlayStation 5 and I play World War II battle game. And my kid buys all these, like, skins for their gun or their tank or whatever.
Like, my daughter's, like, super into, she's super into Roblox now. She's 8 years old.
So is my daughter, who's 9.
Yeah, of course. Every
tons of Roblox. I mean, yeah. The amount of times I've put money into Roblox is insane.
Exactly. You know, and she customizes her avatar and stuff like that. And, like, and she wants to get new equipment for her avatar and all this different stuff. And it's like, I wonder about, like, how normal or how her mind, as she gets older, having grown up in this, like, Roblox world, how is this kind of technology going to, like, her generation, this is what always blows my mind. And I can't even fully get my head around it, is, like, the way that we think about opportunities to build new tools in software. I mean, her generation, our kids' generation, are coming up in a time where all this stuff was just normal when they got here to Earth.
Just how they grew up,
right? You know, like, I mean, how that changes your mind and how you see potential opportunities and what things are is just going to be unreal.
Yeah. And I mean, just even taking it out of NFT world, like, and I know, like, gamers actually are kind of scared of NFTs, like, kind of traditional gamers, and they're not necessarily totally embracing it yet. But I mean, like, we have this warship game. Go into the super details, but it's World of Warships, this game. And you can have ships in it and they fight fun. So the ships are not always available. Like, it's digital. They could make every ship available, but they choose not to make every ship available, right? So a ship is available for a period of time, then it's never available again. So if you have one of these ships, like, you spent money essentially to acquire it one way or another, to, like, buy tokens or to improve your other ships, make them good enough to earn enough of the in-game currency that, you know, it's kind of all, like, what's already going on, but it's just in the game. So it's not traded wider than that. Like, that ship, let's just say, example, is, like, incredibly valuable. Like, there would be people who would absolutely pay you money. Like, you spent money to acquire the ship. There are definitely people who would pay you money to acquire that ship from you. Like, maybe you're done playing the game or whatever. Or maybe you spent the time to earn the ship and you just want to sell it. So, like, all these things, like, I mean, the amount of money I put into these games is substantial. I'm like, huh. And then the kid never plays the game again at some point. And you're like, wow, like, if I could just sell all of the game assets in there, even at a loss. Like, that seems like useful.
I mean, we take our old Nintendo or Sega Genesis and go sell it to like GameStop, you know, wherever we're right, gonna get rid of our old stuff,
have
right?
More like, value. Like,
now they have more value.
The old games, actually, you could sell the game back, right? Like, now that you download the game digitally and all the purchases are in-app, that money just goes away. It just goes to the software developer. It doesn't go anywhere else. You can't recoup any of it. So, you know, there's a lot of solutions to all these things. It's going to come up again, too, when we talk about, like, kind of tokens and more in our world. But, like, I think there are existing world solutions to a lot of these problems that don't involve crypto at all. Like, these game companies could have a way to a marketplace in them, right? Like, you could have a marketplace and have USD transactions. And, like, it's a little tricky because the underlying, like, Visas of the world aren't really set up for, like, microtransactions. And so it does get a little tricky. And, like, if I want to have a bunch of 50-cent transactions, that gets kind of weird. But, you know, Apple's managed it by bundling them up. Like, when you do your million 25-cent Apple microtransactions, right, they just bill you, like, at the end of the week or whatever, there you hit some threshold and then they bill you. So there are like other solutions to parts of it that are possible. And I think the same is true of like when you get into like the investment aspects or like what Jordan's doing, your other podcast co-host with tokens and his business. And like, you know, I don't know if we want to transition to that.
Let's get into that. Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, real quick. This podcast is sponsored by Instrumental Products. That's my product studio, where I and my small crew, we take new product ideas from concept to launched. I'm a full-stack product designer and developer, and I love collaborating with fellow founders, creators, and SaaS companies to bring that spark of energy into new product ideas. Think of Instrumental Products as your shortcut to shipping that next idea and getting it into the hands of your customers as efficiently as possible. Got something to ship? Let's talk. Visit instrumentalproducts.com to learn more. All right. So Jordan and I have been talking about this on the podcast. He's very much getting into it with Rally. And there are other software startups going in this direction. All right. So my, again, like super layman understanding of this is basically if a software startup is going to become like Web3 enabled or whatever, like associated with Web3, it means that they are at some point going to offer a token, like from their brand.
Potentially. Mm-hmm.
And users of their tool, like the more they use it or the more they help grow the tool and its user base, they gain ownership of this token. And I guess externally, the token could be bought and sold just like any other token, a Bitcoin or Ethereum or Solana. And that's the idea. It's almost like the only parallel I can think of is like a publicly traded company, right? Like I use an Apple computer, but I could also own Apple stock. But I guess the idea with this is that it's more intertwined where like the more you use it, the more stock you gain in this or equity that you gain, right? Which in turn like raises the value of that coin.
Right. So I think there's this example of like, you know, the way it works now is you go and get investment from rich people. Like you're literally limited to people who make more than $200,000 a year or $300,000 a year can invest in private companies essentially as like an angel or things like that or VC. And so you get a handful of those, you raise some money, then you start your software business. Your customers have nothing to do with any of it. Your first customers get nothing out of it other than being the first customers, which is great if they like your product, that's fine. But we all know that the first customers are actually super important. Like they're giving you the most important feedback. They're taking the biggest risk because you're probably going to go out of business is the reality. So like they're taking the risk, putting their time and effort to participating in your software product at very early stages. And they're not, you know, compensated for any of this. They can't even buy shares in your company because you are not a publicly traded company. Like, yes, with Apple, I could buy shares, but I can't buy shares in your early startup. It's literally impossible, right? And it's like against the law. Like you can't even offer this. It's not offerable. So I think that's where it's interesting is because with the coins, you do have this at least potential. I think there's not a lot of places that have realized the potential yet. It's still super early. But the potential idea of like both raising money from more people and then also by rewarding early customers in tokens, so that they're rewarded for their early participation.
Yeah, it's like a user activation play, marketing play on the user side. And then on the company side, it's like financing.
Right. It could be financing initially for the company and depending on how it's all structured, but that's a possibility. And then also, I don't think Jordan's really set up that way. Like he's got more traditional financing, but it's more on his about the rewards for the early users. If you're early, if you give us that time, effort, obviously you're going to be more engaged in marketing and sharing it. Like, and we all know that's, again, super important early on. Do those early customers go out and tell their friends and talk about it on Twitter and tell their business colleagues? Like, if they have essentially feels like an ownership stake or some financial upside, certainly, then they're going to be more inclined to talk about it. So
I guess to play a little bit of like devil's advocate, I still find myself in this, like, I'm intrigued by the idea. I'm interested in learning about it, but I don't know what I think about it yet. It still feels too abstract. So just on what we're saying here about it's a way to grow engagement and growth with early users. But what about the product itself, right? Like, what about getting back to basics of like, you have to solve a problem that people actually care about? How does a tokenization even help solve that problem or make it easier? Or, you know, like, aside from just like giving users equity or giving them more of a stake in the early parts of a company by using the product, is there anything else like functionally that a token could potentially do?
Well, there is, like, and so like in the horse racing game I'm involved in, the token is going to be like how you buy and sell things in the game. There's two tokens, actually, and one of them is the transactional token. So it allows things like super low-cost transactions. Like, there's no 3% Stripe involved there. Now all the in-game transactions are basically free, even though there's real money moving back and forth between them. So, like, that would be, like, one example of, like, in the application, there's some benefit. So, yeah, although I don't think it necessarily always has to. To me, like, it's still interesting just in the, like, is this a way to do equity that's better? Which is where kind of what I was saying before, like, they could just change the laws and make it so I could just issue stock to all my early customers. Like, that could be a thing, right? Like, it's not a thing. I can't actually do that, but it could be a thing if we change the laws to make it a thing, and then that would be a thing. And I think that would be, it's not a path for everybody, just like this Web3 stuff wouldn't be a path for everybody, but it might be a path for certain kinds of businesses to raise money. And so, like, another example is, like, I think, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, I kind of messaged Patio 11 on this and he didn't reply, but it's like Stripe. Like, to me, Stripe is like the perfect example. Like, I was super early on Stripe. I was so happy with Stripe. We were coming from like authorize.net. It was a total disaster. Stripe was so much better. The API, it's all great. I put tons of effort into Stripe. I mean, I personally involved in this Laravel ecosystem with a lot of software developers. I have personally exposed thousands of software developers to Stripe. Mm-hmm. I don't get anything from Stripe, right? I literally couldn't participate in Stripe if I wanted to. They are a private company still, even after 12 years or whatever it's been. I can't even buy stock in this thing I'm pushing to everybody all the time, much less, like, way back in the day, have any way to invest in it or participate in it at all, even though I've made them millions of dollars minimum. Like, minimum, I've made them millions of dollars. But, you know, I get to use the product, I like the product, and that's great. And, you know, certain products are so good, right, that they cause that reaction. I didn't need financial motivation to push it, which is great.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, there is even just this idea of fairness on some level of, like, I've made you millions of dollars, and it feels like there should be some way to have some element within that.
Some, right? Like, early adopter benefit.
Something, right? So I do think that there is, like, these things are kind of out there. And I feel like that's where, like, a couple of years ago, like, crowdfunding, and even now you're still seeing people talking about that. It's like, it's in the air that people want to have a way to do these things.
Yeah, it still seems like, to me, the connection that I can still most easily make is a way to fund and a way to reward early users. But I guess what I'm also sort of, like, waiting for in this space is, like, the example or a couple of examples where it's like, oh, that really clicked and that was a success story for that software startup who really made it work. Because I feel like anytime I listen to anyone talking about the possibilities of Web3, it's only about possibilities and ideas. You know, it's not super concrete.
Well, I'd say the thing with this is it's kind of interesting because you have a lot of people who aren't software people in this space. And now you have more software people, right? But like this, literally all this stuff was sort of not even a thing until literally last year. So like, obviously it feels like crypto's been around forever. And why is there not the big success story yet? But really, this stuff we're talking about is extremely new. And I mean, we all know how long it takes to make software, right? Like a lot of the like real teams with real people doing real businesses using these things, like they're just coming online. Like Rally is just getting its first customers, right? Like this horse racing game, which is built by a bunch of EA devs who ran Madden, NFL, like real software development team, not like some randos who are like, we're going to build a game. And like, they've never built anything. These are professional game developers, a big team of them building a real thing.
Yeah.
But that takes a year to build a real game, right? So like this was only started being possible last year. So you're not going to see it until end of this year, next year. And that's why I think, well, no, like if we get to like 2 or 3 years from now and there's still no examples of like, oh yeah, here's an example of where this worked. Then I think, yeah, it didn't work, whatever. People didn't want it. Crypto crash into nothing, and so you can't even do it, whatever. Like, there's something there.
Like, what do you think, whether it's in our software world or even just crypto in the larger world, what shoes need to drop for this to go mainstream? Because I feel like it's even as popular as, and we're starting to see it in, like, news coverage and stuff like that, but, like, it's still not mainstream to a point where, like, everyone who is investing in crypto, including myself, is like, just in case this becomes huge. People like to talk about it like this is the next internet, right? Like just in case it actually is the next internet.
Right.
But what would that even look like, right? Because like my brother who is not in the tech industry or my parents, you know, they've heard of NFTs. They maybe have thought about opening a Coinbase account once, but never really did. Like they're so far, so many steps away from ever actually participating in this world. So it's not mainstream yet to me.
I think you have a ways to go with that. I think that like we're in this world where like we expect everything to be super fast, right? And happen instantly. But I think the reality is, like I said, these more real software teams doing real stuff, even the ability to do this is new. Like basic things like Ethereum, Solana, like they don't have good libraries in all the programming languages. They literally just have JavaScript. Like if you don't primarily use JavaScript, you can't even really use them. JavaScript and Rust or whatever. Like each have a couple languages, but like you can't just go in any common language, Ruby or PHP or anything like that, any of the web languages, and be like, oh, where's the like full SDK that's got everything I need to be able to do transactions? That like literally doesn't exist. So we're so like incredibly early that I think on that regard, I just think it's a while. And then you're going to have like, yes, the couple things that make it hits, then it starts to build out where like, who makes it easier? Because the way it works right now, like it's hard to do. And the normal people are never going to do the way it works right now. It's going to be, there's going to be people in the middle to facilitate that.
And I know this sounds like I'm very skeptical and anti this whole thing. I'm really not. It's just more like I don't quite see the bridge to get there. Because like when I think about the early internet, yeah, we had like the dot-com boom and bust and all that. But like, it was clear that like the existence of the internet solves major problems for major parts of the world. Like commerce.
I disagree with you. Totally disagree with you.
What do you mean?
There's a very famous article. I can get it for you to like post up here in the show notes or whatever, where a guy wrote a post in Newsweek in like the early 2000s or whatever. And he literally goes through line by line. Every single thing, the internet's stupid because like nobody's ever going to book the hotel room. Nobody's going to ever book airfare. Nobody's going to ever buy books. Nobody's going to, all this stuff that we all literally do every time we do anything on the internet, the whole thing. It was like, no.
That's an interesting point.
He's come out a couple of years later, not even that long later. It was like, I was totally wrong. Like I totally
believe. But at least he could envision that person. I haven't read that article, but I've seen stuff like it where completely right off the internet, right?
There's a lot of, yeah, that was, I think it wasn't.
But at least they could point to it and say like, all these people are saying we're going to buy books and we're going to buy dog food on the internet. They're wrong. But at least they can point to it. Like, I don't know what it is that we're arguing like will happen in the future.
I think it's like the stuff we're talking about. Like, people will fund very successful companies by using token rewards. People will buy digital art, will overtake physical art in total revenue. in 10 years from now. I mean, we didn't even talk about other uses for things like NFTs, which is like connecting, the NFTs can connect the real world to the digital world. So like I could have an NFT that gives me access to a place, like a club. Like I have an NFT, gives me access to the club. When I don't want to be a member of the club anymore, I can just sell the NFT. And now I'm not a member anymore. And that person who bought it is.
The other like physical thing that I think about are like contracts, right? Like it's literally, we're talking like with Ethereum, we're talking about smart contracts. So
contracts.
Anything that is contract based in the world, whether it's like real estate or yeah, like ownership or membership or access can be digital access.
Right. So now that's where, that's kind of like the line where like I become the person who is the naysayer. Like, because that's the like, oh, you're going to buy a house and like, you'll just do it on the blockchain and like, it'll just magically instantly happen. And like, that to me is probably like, for me is probably too far, like maybe not in like the distant future, but like in terms of comparing it to the internet, like 2.0, I don't know if I feel like in 5 years that like all mortgages are going to be an Ethereum contract. And, you know, I think that that's like, to me, I don't think that's true. So that's like my line of where like, I don't think it's going to be that.
I mean, why are you skeptical on that?
I don't think the blockchain solves a lot of the like, or not easily solves a lot of things involved with something like that. You have to have like title. You have to go to like the county clerk. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff in there beyond just the bank gives me money.
Yeah, like a lot of like government infrastructure needs to become digital.
Right, right. The bank gives me money.
That's going to be like the last thing to come along.
But right? Yeah, but there's like all this other stuff that happens as part of it. Like, I don't know if that stuff's all going to be just on the blockchain. Like, could you write a contract that theoretically does all this? Absolutely. Like, will it actually happen? That feels unlikely to me on like a near-ish term time scale. And there's a lot of things to work out. Like, people don't want all their stuff. There's like this dichotomy where it's like everything's public, but it's sort of anonymous, but it's sort of public. So there's a lot of stuff to work through there societally. People have like privacy expectations that may not be applicable in a blockchain based financial system and things like that. So, but I think, you know, there's other things like authentication, which are interesting to be able to have these using it for authentication. I mean, I don't think Web3, I think the term is a little bit unfortunate because I don't think it's as big as Web 1.2. Like in terms of, and again, maybe I'll be the one who's like 10 years from now, I'll be like, oh, I totally got that wrong. But to
there's
me, like,
this podcast with Ian Lang.
Right, yeah. Like this idiot on this podcast said Web3 wouldn't be as big as Web1. Right. But like, to me, Web3 is more like the natural extension of like digitization that occurred with like Web 1.2. And like, it's more just like, it's biggering Web 1.2 more than it is like, oh, the like mental sea shift that was like everything just literally only physical to now.
But in terms
like
of like growing digital, the economy, I guess there's all sorts of different arguments you can make here. But like when I think about like Web 1.0, it literally expanded the economy for so many people, right? Like it took the corner shop who makes t-shirts and now they can sell them all over the world, right?
It did put a lot of those out of business also.
Of course. Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, no, I agree. Like, I mean, obviously, like the amount of economic activity that's come out of it is huge. I don't know if I think it's that same level of economic activity. Maybe it is. Like,
yeah. And you know what? Maybe it didn't even happen all that. Like looking back on the 90s.
Right. It's not fast. Yeah.
Like we like to look back on it like, oh, it all changed when we were teenagers and it was like overnight. But like, it was like over a 10-year process, right? And,
yeah, exactly.
And we're only a couple of years into like crypto really being like an actual thing that people talk about all the time.
Right. I think it's like that phase of like, yeah, it was like, okay, 95, you had like your AOL and like stuff like that. And like you couldn't really do anything. And then, you know, that progressed and you had the crash and it seemed like nothing was going to happen. Then you had Amazon and Google and all those things come online. And it's like, okay, now you have like the modern internet. But that's like 7 to 10 years.
And then it's even sort of hard to remember the internet before what people think of as Web 2.0, right? Like social media and like that stuff did not come along until well into the 2000s, right?
No, if you're not in your like mid 40s, like you don't remember that. I don't think really like they're not well because like that was a whole different world where it was just like chat rooms and email and
yeah. A couple like random websites, like you know all the websites. You can just find a list.
Right, exactly. Like you went to Yahoo and literally went through the directory of every website on the internet. Like that's what you did. And so like, you know, obviously we're so far away from that, and that explosion in the, like, it is a short time span in the history of the world, but it's a long time span in terms of, like, yeah, like in crypto, yes, we've had a year or two, like, where this stuff has even been on people's brains. It's like, you could theoretically do other types of things besides just change the financial system. Like, there's this database essentially, and the contracts and what that could mean. And so ownership and how that's all tied together. And so I think it's going to take some time to see if it becomes something or nothing. Like, it could totally become nothing. I am happy to tell people all the time, I would not be, like, shocked if it becomes nothing. Like, definitely could become nothing. You also need luck. Like, maybe the world, right? You have war in Ukraine, and maybe it spreads to Europe, and maybe all kinds of shit happens, and, like, everybody, this all loses steam. Or maybe it creates more steam. Like, maybe people want money that's outside of country boundaries even more than they did before. And, like, who knows? Like, who it's knows? Hard to predict these things, right? So I wouldn't be surprised by any outcome, really. But I do think it's, like, early, and you want to – I like being involved in it and just seeing what's going on, basically.
It does seem still very relatively early. And it also seems like in the last couple of years, it has taken the next logical steps toward becoming a bigger thing. Right. Like, you see, like,
right,
major companies investing in crypto and,
right,
and all the investment and all the and everything, you know, kind of like, and yes, it's, like, kind of crazy and volatile, but, like, that's what happens in the early days of something that eventually becomes big. Right. So,
I mean, it's all this web one where it's like all these companies had crazy valuations and then they all, like, went out of business. So, like, and then on the ashes of that, all these other companies rose up and were, like, became what we think of as the internet. Right. So,
yeah
it's hard to know.
That does it for today's episode of the Full Stack Founder Podcast. As always, the show notes include links to the YouTube channel for this podcast, where you can catch these full interviews on video, and my YouTube channel. That's where I'm building products in public. See you next week. Thank you.